are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 18th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, and of course, rarely is the week casual in this era. On the program today, Digby from the blog Hullabaloo. We'll be recapping some of the news of the week. And David Feldman from The David Feldman Show will be joining us to recap some of the stuff from the week or just to talk about who he's mad at.
And The Sopranos 20-year anniversary.
Well, I didn't want to.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was a spoiler.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump told his personal lawyer to lie to Congress, joining Richard Nixon in the pantheon of presidents who had this act included in one of their articles of impeachment.
It's always the cover-up. Henry, you want to pray? Wait, your name isn't Henry? Get out of my office, Mike.
Meanwhile, Bill Barr's testimony has just gotten a lot more interesting. DHS and ICE separated more migrant children than they revealed. LA teachers still on strike, drawing massive crowds. The shutdown continues as Trump becomes even more unelectable. And apparently the administration leaked the commercial travel plans of members of Congress to maybe endanger their safety as they plan to go talk to NATO officials and troops in Afghanistan. Representative Eshoo cancels the Medicare for All hearings amid what seems to be no reporting on that. And Representative Republican Jason Smith apologizes for being caught as a racist. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Big stuff happening with this BuzzFeed piece. We've already gotten Senator Jeff Merkley, calling for the president to either resign or get impeached. This is a big deal because, as you know, Richard Nixon, they had drawn up three articles of impeachment with Richard Nixon. We'll talk about this with Digby. But you should know that Article 3 of what was going to be undoubtedly an impeachment that certainly Richard Nixon thought would happen, which is why he left, includes the following words: counseling witnesses with respect to the giving of false or misleading statements to lawfully authorized investigative officers and false or misleading testimony in duly instituted judicial and congressional proceedings. I mean, this is one of the major obstruction charges. We'll get to this clip when we get Digby on the program. Starting early this morning, obviously, I appreciate your joining us. Want to let you know, as a small business owner, many respects a reluctant one. I wonder if that's always the case with all small business owners.
No, it's you because you hate freedom.
Well, I'm trying to always constantly centrally plan freedom, and right, it never goes well. However, if you are trying to centrally plan freedom for your own small business, this may help, particularly if you have a client-based business. Right? Like you're a graphic designer or whatever you would have clients for, I guess. Honeybook.com can help you spend less time handling the administrative work and more time doing what you love. Honeybook is an all-in-one business management platform for creative small businesses. They make it easy to streamline your process with client and calendar management tools and custom-branded proposals and contracts. You can even get e-signatures, generate invoices, and get paid faster, all with one online system. Over 75,000 photographers, designers, event professionals, other solo entrepreneurs have saved hundreds, if not thousands, of hours a year with HoneyBook. They have on there, you know what I, you know, like the one business thing that I understand, that concept, is that 80-20 concept. You want to spend 80% of what you're doing at work doing what you do best. And that is one of their logos, essentially, on their website. And they get this idea. You don't want to be, if you are one of the people who are working in any of those type of fields, you don't want to spend more than 10, 15%, 20% of your time doing administrative work. And we have partnered with HoneyBook.com to offer Majority Report listeners 50% off the first year of HoneyBook when you use the promo code MAJORITY. So get started at HoneyBook.com today. Use the promo code MAJORITY for 50% off your first year. Again, that's HoneyBook.com, promo code MAJORITY. Check it out, folks. Also, if you have heartburn or acid reflux, keeps you up at night, try Metacline. It's a new natural solution to a problem that affects thousands of Americans. And I think this probably applies to a lot of different sleep problems that people have. It's a comfortable acid reflux pillow system for your bed that keeps you in the best sleeping position for natural relief. No more sliding down a wedge or putting blocks under your bed frame. No more dangerous medication. No more suffering. The Metacline system is available in three sizes. It has a patented arm pocket, so you can sleep comfortably on your side without pressure on your shoulder. The soft, supportive body pillow keeps you from rolling to your back so you can get the rest you deserve. If you're suffering with nighttime heartburn, try a Metacline tonight. With their 100-day guarantee, relief guarantee, you got nothing to lose. The system ships free with a special offer and comes complete with a full set of pillowcases. For more information, visit goodnightheartburn.com. Or call 800-610-1607. That's 800-610-1607. Enter the code MAJORITY at checkout for fast, free shipping. That's goodnightheartburn.com or call 800-610-1607 to learn more and try Medicline today. Medicline today. All right, folks, going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Digby. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday. And fortunately today, we have a guest who allows us to play this little ditty.
Are you ready for some pee-pee? Yeah. Are you ready for
I don't know why that song makes me laugh so much, but I enjoy
it.
It does
me too.
It's
very chill.
Very chill.
It's about all I can handle today, so that's great.
It feels like sort of like I don't know, the lounge music, like the lounge music that hit like about 5 years ago. No, it was, but that came back a little bit.
There's an artist named Jim Noir who was in that sort of style.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There was also like some other, well, whatever. Let's not get too caught up in this. But what is old is new again, isn't it, Digby? We're going to, it feels like Donald Trump wants to hit all three of the same articles of impeachment that Richard Nixon was faced with. And this story in BuzzFeed, we got to be a little bit careful because this stuck out for me in this BuzzFeed story, and I want to get your take on this, obviously, but it was reported by two law enforcement officers who are familiar with the investigation, I guess, that that Donald Trump specifically told Cohen to lie to Congress about Cohen's repeated, contacts over this Trump Tower building in Russia. Now, the Trump Tower building in Russia itself, you know, it could be just as innocuous as, he wanted to build a Trump Tower in Russia. He's perfectly allowed to do that. For some reason, he didn't want that to be known. And he told his lawyer to lie to Congress about it. And his lawyer, I guess, did lie to Congress about it. And I just read this before you came on, but it's worth reading again. I mean, I think you know this, is that the third article of impeachment, Nixon, was specifically, the words were, counseling witnesses with respect to giving false or misleading statements to lawfully authorized investigative officers and false and misleading testimony in duly instituted judicial and congressional proceedings. Check, right? I mean, if this story is true from BuzzFeed, check.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is, and, you know, this isn't the first we've heard of this. It just has some new detail that we hadn't heard before. And one of the reasons why I think it's got so much credibility is that this charge turned up in the Michael Cohen, the Mueller, sentencing agreement for Michael Cohen for his lying to Congress. And this, so we knew that this sort of was out there, but what we didn't know before, what this adds to it, is the fact that this has been confirmed by two law enforcement representatives. One assumes this must be from the Southern District of New York, which is interesting in itself because we had assumed that this stuff was sort of centered in the Mueller investigation, but it's possible that they're both kind of looking at this Trump Tower Moscow deal for different reasons, and that's how the information is being shared among the two offices. But there's also this detail that there is some documentary evidence. Now, what that is, we don't know. I heard Leopold on TV this morning, reporters,
right.
Jason Leopold, saying that they were very confident. They wouldn't say that they had seen it or not seen it, that they'd been briefed, whatever it is, but they're very confident that it exists. I guess you can think they're lying about that, but it wouldn't make much sense. And what that means is that it's either a tape, which would be extremely, you want to talk about the Watergate parallels, or, it's some kind of an order that came through on paper. Now, that's not how Trump does business. He's generally a guy who gives his orders verbally. So I'm thinking that it's some kind of a tape and we know that Cohen was taping things.
Right.
So.
Right. We know Cohen was taping things throughout that period of time. It sounds like he was taping it almost for years on some level. Like he was aware, like I've got to protect myself. All right. It makes this testimony from William Barr that much more important. And it's interesting. there's a lot of times, and particularly I go back to when we saw Wyden and Merkley, I think it was, when they would ask specific questions about, of Clapper regarding the NSA spying. And there was a sense that they had answers, right, about certain things that they couldn't talk about. And they would ask questions that were specifically a function of that. And I think they're and here is Amy Klobuchar. And you get the sense that Amy Klobuchar 2 days ago had a sense that stuff like this was maybe out there to drop or, you know, was just paying attention. But here is her line of questioning of the attorney general nominee who just had his hearings 2 days ago.
In your memo, you talked about the Comey decision, and you talked about obstruction of justice, and you already went over that, which I appreciate. You wrote on page one that a president persuading a person to commit perjury would be obstruction. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Or any person who persuades another to, yeah.
Okay. You also said that a president or any person convincing a witness to change testimony would be obstruction. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And on page two, you said that a president deliberately impairing the integrity or availability of evidence would be an obstruction. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so what if a president told a witness not to cooperate with an investigation or hinted at a pardon?
You know, I'd have to know the specific. I'd have to know the specific facts.
Okay. And you wrote on page one that if a president knowingly destroys or alters evidence, that would be obstruction.
Yes.
Okay. So what if a president drafted a misleading statement to conceal the purpose of a meeting? Would that be obstruction?
Again, you know, I'd have to know the specifics.
Well, you probably will soon, but I mean, there it is. I mean, she basically lays out two or three things that I think are fairly clear that Donald Trump or is suspected of doing. And if this reporting is true, but what do you make? Here's what's like. This is the first, if I'm not mistaken. This seems to be the first information we have about this investigation that has come from law enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember a single other piece of information. What we've gotten up to this point are different defense attorneys trying to protect their client by giving information about other client, other people who are caught up in this investigation. I don't remember another story of significance, it seems to me, in which law enforcement officials were cited. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, like I said before, I think that this had to have come from the Southern District of New York. And I think that Leopold and Cormier, the two reporters for BuzzFeed, they also dropped the story about the Trump Tower Moscow deal that was going on through 2015. I suspect that that's where it's coming from, that they're more leaky, and that the Mueller investigation, I mean, we really have no idea outside of the actual court filings what that case looks like. But the Southern District of New York, maybe it could be FBI agents or some kind of, you know, other investigators that they have on staff, something like that. It's interesting they call them law enforcement. So, I guess that could apply to prosecutors, too. I don't even know. But
definitely,
that's where I suspect that it's coming from, is from there. And it like I said, it's very curious because it means that this particular part of the Russia investigation that has to do with Trump Tower Moscow, I'm assuming that much of that originated from that Cohen investigation, that's where they got this documentary evidence, that's where they discovered this. And maybe it's just something that, you know, they had and then they turned it over to Mueller and they're just sort of repeating what they already knew. But I don't think that's true because this sensing agreement that Cohen just did with Mueller, that had to do with this perjury or, you know, lying to Congress. So that's pretty recent. So I'm assuming that they must be working in tandem there. There's some kind of a co-equal investigation on this Moscow Trump Tower thing. And it's really looking like that is a much bigger part of this, I think, than we may have realized, that there's much more to this Trump Tower Moscow thing. I mean, I read something last night that there's someone saying that in the agreement that Trump signed, you know, remember he said there was no signed agreement, then later turns up the signed agreement that they actually had a deal, that in that deal was supposed to be $1 million in earnest money that the Russian developers were supposed to give to Donald Trump. And now people are wondering, did that money ever get sent? I mean, was there actually $1 million exchanged somewhere in the middle of all this? Which, you know, and of course you're wondering whose interests are being served going either direction. I mean, we know that Donald Trump's interests were being served by Russians helping him win the election. You know, what were the Russians getting out of this at the time? And which people were they? I mean, we know that the Russian system tends to, you know, the government is very much involved with these developers and these, you know, these oligarchs with all the money, and that this is sort of a, you know, a very elite group that sort of works together. So who was involved in all that? So that part of the story, which is not something we've concentrated on until recently, for obvious reasons, we didn't really know about it. That seems to be a much bigger deal. So it's interesting that this is the first leaks we're getting out from those kinds of sources in this. Because, you know, Sam, remember in all the other investigations, I mean, you go back to the 90s, these prosecutors leaked like a sieve, and they did it very, you know, strategically. They were trying to put pressure on witnesses and doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, they played a lot of those, you know, so-called pseudo scandals in the Clinton years in the press. I mean, they used the press as part of their strategy, and that's just not happened with Mueller before. And so it's not something that is unique. You know, this kind of a leak coming from law enforcement isn't unusual. What's unusual is that there haven't been leaks coming from law enforcement.
Right. Right. Interesting. And I have to say this. I'm not drinking today. In the past,
why not?
Well, I'm not drinking yet today. But in the past, you know, we've done a show where we drank a little bit, and you know, we talk about sort of more barroom theories. And so I'm not going to go too far with this, but when I hear about an international deal involving a lot of money that is set up by Felix Sater, who is a, it's unequivocal. He, to the point where Loretta Lynch wrote an affidavit on his behalf, he was or is or an FBI asset and at different times a CIA asset. I imagine he's based in New York. I imagine the New York FBI was involved in some way running this guy. It's, you know, I don't have a sense of, you know, I don't know enough about these things to know, you know, what kind of relationship they have. But if this guy's out there working deals with international money, right, has done this multiple times, was a special advisor to Donald Trump, I can't help but think that that the story is bigger than Trump. And that it involves Felix Sater and, you know, whoever. The idea that Felix Sater is setting up these deals, right, where he has been basically providing information to the CIA and the FBI about tracking money, international money flows, and they weren't aware of this. I think there's a lot of other subplots here to this. We may be talking about the one that has the most relevance in terms of the presidency, but that doesn't mean it's the biggest plot line that is going on there. And that's, you know, people can go back and listen to the episode we did with Perrine over the vacation if they want to, you know, hear more of sort of backfill that stuff. But For certain law enforcement to be leaking this suggests to me that there is some other game being played here, right? Because the Mueller investigation has been super, super tight. And the Southern District of New York is also known as being fairly super tight. You know, when you talk about these leaks during the Clinton investigation, that was all coming out of Ken Starr's, you know, merry band of followers. And they were all, you know, the people who were doing the leaking there, none of them were career investigators, right? They were people like Brett Kavanaugh, who was literally in charge of leaking to the press in the Ken Starr investigation. So the idea that that people feel the need to get this information out there at this time is fascinating to me.
Well, it is, and you know, you have to wonder. This is coming up just before. I mean, when is Cohen scheduled to
testify? Within
testify on the 7th,
right?
I think. Yeah, so it's right around the corner.
Three weeks.
By the way, let's not forget this other little game that's being played by the president himself, who is now out there tampering with the witness, Michael Cohen, by threatening his father-in-law. And yeah, I mean, this is real mob stuff. This is, you know, the nice little father-in-law you got here. You know, be a shame if anything happened to him.
Right.
I mean, it's really outrageous. He just did it again this morning in his tweet about all this. So, you know, the fact that Cohen's testimony is coming up seems to maybe be a catalyst for maybe, you know, both what Trump is saying about the father-in-law, SDNY. I mean, who knows? Maybe they're putting pressure on Cohen. There's a whole lot of information they wanted from him that they didn't get, which is why he's going to do 3 years in prison instead of getting off, because he refused to talk. And we assume, I mean, maybe that's got something to do with Felix Sater. I mean, this is such, I mean, can we even believe we're talking about this? I mean, this is the president. It's the president's lawyer. It's the president of the United States. I mean, this guy, this is cheap mob stuff, even the Felix Sater stuff. I mean, this guy went to jail for a barroom brawl where he cut somebody with a broken glass, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and has subsequently played this very strange role in being an asset and also a criminal, and you know, I mean, you just couldn't make this stuff up. And you know, maybe there's something to do with that as well. I mean, if it's the Southern District, they've got a whole, you know, different set of priorities, it seems. Maybe they're breaking up something
that's
on their end.
Yeah,
that has,
that's the sense I get, that this
stuff
is this may be a bank shot in some respects. But, you know, it's all conjecture now. But, you know, moving from this sort of the law and order stuff to the sort of the political implications, this puts a lot of pressure, it seems to me, on the Democrats to start hearings in the House, right? Like, put aside everything else. You just, as a president, you can't tell people to lie to Congress. I mean, you can't do that as anybody. But as a president, you know, like I said, this was, there were three charges against, pieces to the Nixon indictment. And one was obstruction, and one was, you know, lying essentially to Congress and to investigators. This is the stuff that people get impeached for. And it strikes me as like, I've said, I don't think that he will get convicted unless there is tapes of him running naked around on the front lawn of the White House, probably chasing a small child. But, short of that, I don't think the Senate's going to do anything like that. But the House, it seems, you know, they're going to have to start proceedings on this, right? I mean, that's what Cohen is probably going to kick off in some way.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's obvious. Look, if this doesn't, and I mean by the whole story, not just this specific thing that we, you know, dropped last night in BuzzFeed. If that doesn't merit, if all of this does not merit an impeachment inquiry. I mean, nobody's saying that they've already come to the conclusion he's impeached and let's move on to the Senate. I mean, obviously they have to hold hearings. They have to do, you know, a full investigation. They've got to lay out the case. That's the whole point of the impeachment, is that they have to lay out a case. And, you know, the idea that, well, we have to wait for Mueller. No, they don't. And that's a mistake to think in those terms, because Mueller, as we learned from the Barr hearings earlier this week, that report, if there is one, may never see the light of day,
right,
or at least not in the way that impeachment managers and the public would need to see it. Because if Mueller presents this to the new Attorney General William Barr, and if William Barr continues to protect the president, which up until now, we have good evidence that that's what he's been hired to do, although perhaps that might change. That he, you know, if that happens, the report comes to the Attorney General. That's the way the rules are. He's right about that. And he will decide what is made public and what isn't. He may very well decide to summarize it in some way that does not tell the whole story and that does not lay it out for the public. The Congress has to do their job on this. Now, it's not right, and all that Mueller investigatory material should go to the Congress, even if it's classified. They should, the committee should have access to it. But, you know, this may be a problem. So, yes, they have to get started, and they have to get started now. You know, I mean, I made the argument before the election that it was that they never needed to run on impeachment. You know, everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, the Democrats, they're going to run on impeachment, and the public will be upset and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they don't have to run on impeachment. They have to run on accountability. They have to run on oversight. They have to say they're going to hold hearings. They're going to look at all this stuff. Well, now that, you know, there's more and more information coming forward, and there's more and more people who are talking, they have to, you know, there's nothing that says you can't hold an impeachment inquiry, which is what we're talking about, and they have to get started because there's not enough time. And if the fact that the Senate, you know, the Republicans in the Senate, who basically are a bunch of dying potted plants, as far as I can tell, they probably won't convict him. Okay, fine. But then you have an election, and what you're running on is the case that the Democrats lay out that of Donald Trump's, you know, lies and various crimes. And then you have a bunch of Republicans who refuse to do anything about it. I don't understand why that's a bad thing for the Democrats. I mean, to me, it's the Republicans who look bad in that situation, Democrats.
I mean, that's a good point to sort of pivot a little bit to. Like, I'm not convinced that that's the thing that you necessarily run on. I mean, I think to a certain extent that, you know, there's the context in which you run, and then there's the thing you run on, right? Like, I think that, and it may be something that, you know, in terms of like the congressional races and certainly senatorial races, is a touchstone, but I think, you know, explaining to the country that Donald Trump is a bad person is not, I think it's annoying because they all know, right? Like, we see this poll that came out the other day. Now, I guess it was yesterday. I think it's a Marist NPR poll. And we haven't quite seen, stuff like this out yet, you know, in the past, but, now where is this? I had it there before. It shows basically that Donald Trump is unelectable, like something like 67% of the population, 57% of the population says they will not vote for Donald Trump, period. And, it suggests to me that on some level, like, you need to go now that we're a ways out. These polls, you know, shift. People don't know, but his approval is slipping with the base. It's conceivable that impeachment might, you know, shore up that base a little bit, but that's not going to help him beyond that. And so the bottom line is, like, you know, Donald Trump is, you know, getting rid of Donald Trump, I think, is going to be a feature of a campaign. But I still think that, like, you have to run on affirmatively, like bringing people stuff that they want their government to do. Right. Like, I think, like, one of the, and again, there were like 30 different but fours, right, with the race with Clinton. But one of the things that she, I think, like, did not make as a primary feature of her campaign was, you know, she spent a lot of time talking about how horrible Donald Trump was. She was right, but I don't know ultimately that you need to prove that to people. I mean, I think people know that he was horrible. They just want to make sure that they're going to vote for something affirmatively as well. So, you know, you impeach the guy and you just basically say, like, it's about the Republicans then, right? It's about the Republicans in the Senate. It's not even about Donald Trump anymore. It's just about people standing in the way of accountability. And,
exactly.
And all right. Well, so let's talk about this a little bit in terms of what's going on with the shutdown. The government shutdown, I think there's just sort of like this slow burn a little bit where the American public hears stories like the New York FBI having a food bank for people who work there, right? That you have government employees who are working without pay. It feels like, you know, if the TSA or the FAA, you know, the flight controllers decided we're going to stage a one-day walkout, that this whole thing would come to a head. And I guess the question is like, what, you know, are we going to have to wait 3 months for that to happen?
It's so painful to watch this whole thing unfold. I mean, look, you know, Trump, he's backed himself into a corner here. He's in a very, very, he's done this to himself. And by the way, you know, I mean, I wrote about this for Salon this morning, and this, you know, I'm so struck by the fact that this guy was supposed to be, he sold himself to the public as the greatest negotiator in the world. And there has never been a worse, and it's the one thing I agree with Ann Coulter on. He's the worst negotiator the world has ever known. He is really, really bad at this. And in fact, he was quoted in the New York Times this week saying, you know, why can't I get a deal? You know, he's whining to Mick Mulvaney. Why can't I get a deal? I'm getting crushed, you know, because he doesn't understand how this works. He doesn't get it. You know, he is unable to do he has two off ramps here that are available to him. One is to come to the Democrats and offer them something really good. He could do that, but he doesn't know what they want. He doesn't understand how that, you know, what kind of things might induce them to agree to maybe come halfway on his wall or some kind of thing. He can't deal. He doesn't know how to do it. We know this because he called them up to the White House. They all went in there. They're sitting there, and he said, "Will you give me my wall?" And Nancy Pelosi, as her opening gambit, says, "No, I won't." And he says, "Bye-bye." And he gets up and leaves. That's his idea of a negotiation. That's not a negotiation, not in politics anyway. Maybe when you're doing a licensing deal for, you know, cheap ties for Macy's or something, maybe you can do that. But that's not going to work with someone who has equal power to you. And you have to go across, you know, you've got to do some kind of horse trading. He has no idea how to do that.
But,
and he's refusing to do it.
Do you think?
So, you know.
This is my sense. He must know that if he offered DACA, right? Like, because they had this deal a year ago.
I know.
They had the deal with, five times the funding for him.
Yep.
And it seems to me the problem is not so much that he doesn't know what the Democrats, what would bring the Democrats to the table, is that he, for all the sort of accolades he got about knowing what his base would accept, he seems to have lost sight of that. And I think, like, to a certain extent, he's got conservative Republicans coming in. He doesn't realize that they have nowhere else to go, or he's afraid of somebody who's telling them you can't do this in terms of DACA. And maybe it's Stephen Miller, maybe, which is just weird to me.
It's Mark Meadows.
It could be Mark Meadows. Somebody's telling him you can't do this. And if you do this, they'll turn on it, which is sort of strange, right? Because theoretically, Trump's supporters are a threat to everybody in the Republican Party. But he seems to be intimidated by the Freedom Caucus in a way that others aren't.
Well, he's being played by them. And just to say, I mean, everybody can play Donald Trump because he's an idiot. So the Freedom Caucus is playing him, too, saying, oh, you can't do that. Don't give an inch. If you give an inch, then you're going to lose your base. And we all know that, you know, Trump is terrified of losing even one voter. You know, I don't even understand that either. I mean, he thinks that's the universe of voters. I mean, if he behaved differently, there might be a different universe of voters for him. Who knows? But in any case, that's where he's at. And Mark Meadows has a different agenda altogether. You know, Mark Meadows, his entire career has been about shutting down the government and about not giving an inch. That's all he does. He has no other way. They like it when the government is shut down. They like it when everything is chaos. Their entire worldview is based upon just, you know, having this rigid set of demands that you either do it or we'll burn this place up. I mean, that's where they are. And so this is working out very well for Mark Meadows, and he's able to get the president.
I think it's
keep him away.
I think it's sorry to interrupt, but I think it's not just Meadows. I think, honestly, like this is like Sean Hannity. Like, we got a clip play it later of Rush Limbaugh saying, if he just hangs in there and he stays in there, like, I do think that Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity are basically saying they'll fold. And so he can't, and he doesn't know who to listen to. In this, like, he has lost sight of the idea that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, because I'm quite convinced he could tell he could just make an announcement tomorrow. We had a secret funding. We built the wall. It's there.
I agree.
It's 87% there. And there'll be a couple of stories in Washington Post. We checked it, and no, there's no more wall. There's just the amount of wall that there was yesterday. And none of his voters would know that, and they certainly wouldn't talk about that on Fox, and end of story. But at one point, this thing comes down. Now, I want to just shift this just a little bit, because we got only a little bit of time here. But there was a thread, and you touched on this a little bit in your Salon column. But the Nancy Pelosi says, you know what? Don't come to Congress and give a State of the Union. It would be wrong because the government is shut down. And then Donald Trump turned around and said, oh, you should not take the Air Force planes for the contingency of Congress people who are going to meet with NATO officials and then to Afghanistan. And then apparently leaked that they may have commercial travel plans, which, you know, that's like getting a little bit endangered. Like, you wouldn't go and say, like, the president's going to go to a surprise visit to blankety blank tomorrow, because Secret Service doesn't want you to do that. But so give me your sense of the way this is playing out, because there was a piece in The Times, I think it was, that was like, voters are going to get sick of this, like, you know, people have got to grow up. And, you know, they sort of like the no labels. We got to get stuff done here. Forgetting that 3 weeks ago, the Republicans controlled all of government and could have passed this legislation if it was passable.
Of course. And, you know, is it surprising that the press is doing this? I noticed it all day yesterday, too. Oh, this tit for tat. And look, they're being petty and they're going back and forth. This is nonsense. Again, this is about Trump. This is about negotiating. And what Nancy Pelosi knew was that Donald Trump really likes his big speech. Lots of clapping, and everybody's watching. He checks the ratings. This joint session of Congress thing is a big deal to Donald Trump. So she knew that if she said, you can't do that, it would put a little bit more pressure on him to perhaps open the government, which is what this whole thing is about, right? I mean, this is just in this shutdown. So she ratcheted up the pressure on him by saying, okay, you're not going to get your big speech until you do this. She had the power to do it. That's a smart negotiating tactic. It is not a petty thing where she's trying to slap him down or make him feel bad. It was about trying to get the government open, because the man will not move off the dime because of what we just said, Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh are having a fit, and Trump doesn't know what to do. He can't take the off-ramp, which I thought was available to him, which was to declare the emergency and let the court sort it out. For some reason, I think that's Mark Meadows again, who has convinced him that he shouldn't do that, because what Mark Meadows wants to do is to have a showdown with Nancy Pelosi. He wants to, you know, break the Democrats' back so that they, you know, they'll never try this again or something, or just for kicks. But whatever the case, Pelosi is trying to get Trump off the dime. Now, Trump's reaction, of course, was just more of a temper tantrum, saying, you know, okay, well, all right, you don't get your trip now, like they really cared, right? And Nancy and the rest of them are going, all right, whatever. But the speech was actually something that Trump values, and that it was important to him, and he's not getting it until he makes his move. The media is just intent upon turning this into exactly what you describe, one of those no-labels things. Oh, the adults in the room, there aren't any. They're all just playing games. And this is not what the people wanted. They want a bipartisan agreement and blah, blah, blah. Well, all that's true. People do want a bipartisan agreement. But you can't deal with this guy. His word is no good. He just, before Christmas, he agreed to that continuing resolution that would have funded the government for a year, and they would have come back and hashed out more stuff about the wall for a couple months. But he backed off because Ann Coulter got mad at him. So you can't deal with somebody like that. That's the second time he's backed out of a deal that was made. The first one was with the Democrats that we talked about before, the immigration deal with DACA and the wall and all that. He backed out at the last minute because Stephen Miller yelled at him. Then this year he did exactly the same thing. So, you know, we're not in a position where, you know, you can just say, well, golly, if only they just sit down in a room. This guy, you know, sits down and then says bye-bye when they won't give him what he wants. So this is a problem and has nothing to do with the Democrats. They're doing the best they can, and they cannot give in to this guy, because if this becomes the way he negotiates, you don't even want to think about what happens when the debt ceiling comes up again. You don't even want to think about what's going to happen in the future, any funding bill he will use as a cudgel. This is not somebody that you can allow to negotiate this way. Now, it's awful, and they've got to do something about it. But, you know, the idea that there's some facile answer if everybody just act like adults is, you know, it's one of those beltway tropes that just drives me crazy.
Well, it also basically says none of these decisions really matter.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's basically the underlying is, like, at the end of the day, as long as we've got our tax cuts, everything else is just details.
Right.
And that is the thing that people. But the problem is, and Greg Sargent, you know, we had him on the other day to talk about a little bit about this asymmetry, is that Democrats respond to that type of New York Times piece in a way that Republicans don't, right? Like, they just don't. That's not part of their media. They have successfully gotten their base and the people that move them to ignore and have disdain for what the New York Times writes or the Washington Post writes. Meanwhile, you know, Chuck Schumer is sitting down at the Bailey's kitchen table going like, I can't believe this Times article. I don't know if you know the Baileys. That's his imaginary family from Long Island that it gives him advice. And that's not my construct. That's his. But that this makes them nervous. And there's the asymmetry right there.
Well, this is one good thing about this new crew that's just come in, I think. You know, a lot of these new freshmen, they don't give a damn about that. They clearly do not care. And, you know, they get hit. They're getting hit daily from, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to, you know, across the board, all of them. You know, they're being hit hard by the media. The right wing's going after them. And they, you know, they're just letting it roll right off their backs. So that dynamic may be changing partially because of that. I also suspect that in this situation, I mean, I see, at least on the part of Pelosi trying to keep her caucus together, she's good at that, but, you know, she's not omnipotent. I mean, she has to do things to appeal to all these people. That this is a case where they truly do feel, and I mean, let's face it, it's a miracle they've hung together. Because in the past, we would have seen a bunch of, you know, more conservative Dems rushing to try and help the Republicans out. And you'd have them standing up, giving speeches.
Yep.
Golly, you know, the Joe Lieberman types.
Or Steny Hoyer sort of was doing this two days ago.
Exactly. But they're not doing it this time. And in fact, Trump even invited the moderates. I mean, Newt Gingrich, and I know exactly how this happened. I happened to be watching it. Newt Gingrich went on Fox and said, hey, look, back when I was in charge, we used to deal with this very easily. We'd get 30 or 40 Democrats, and we'd get them together, and we'd get them to put pressure on the president. And that's what Trump needs to do now. He needs to put pressure on Pelosi by getting 30 or 40 of her Democrats together, bring them up to the White House, and make a deal, and then she'll have no choice. And I'm watching, I'm going, man, you are so... you are so living in the past.
Right.
I mean, first of all, he didn't really do that very well at the time. He's exaggerating his success on anything. But you know, this is such an old-fashioned view of how things work. And, you know, Trump tried it. He called up the moderates and said, you know, we're going to get this centrist coalition, you know, the No Labels coalition, going to come up to the White House. I'm inviting you up and whatever. And the Democrats said, nah, we're not interested. And I was surprised. I mean, I'm still surprised that crack hasn't appeared, but it hasn't. And, you know, this is one of the advantages of having Donald Trump, who is, you know, such an
so toxic,
amazing,
right? You don't want to be seen with him at the White House.
Nobody. But, well, look, that pressure comes on Democrats as well as Republicans, right? If Democrats deal with Trump, they get a primary. I don't have any doubt about it. That,
right.
You know, any Democrat who's seen as a Trump Democrat, they are not going to survive, and they must know that. But it is kind of a miracle that they're doing this. And so that dynamic, the press is trying to play this old game. They've brought out their old playbook of, you know, we need more adults in the room thing. I just don't think it's going to work. And if you look at the public opinion polls, yeah, it's pretty clear who they're blaming for this.
Yep.
The
well,
guy who
it was pretty, Trump made it pretty easy. All right. Well, let me just, you know, I just want to touch on this, but we have to go, and maybe for a future conversation. That point about the freshman Democrats who come in, right, who are it's interesting because a lot of these folks are ideologically to the left of where the center of the Democratic Party has been, okay, for the past 20, 30 years. But it is what's operative right now is that they are more partisan, right? I mean, this is the sort of like paradox that we don't hear about with someone like AOC, right? Is that her ideology is one thing. But what is really in effect right now is almost like her partisanship.
Yep.
Right? Like she's doing what we wanted Dems to do 10, 15 years ago.
More and better Democrats. That
well,
was the idea.
Right.
That
and
the,
but that look. Meant two different things, right? That means like we had we all had our ideological aspirations for these Democrats, but we wanted them simply to go in and fight, even on
right.
their own terms, right? And she's just going and doing that, like, you know, going to go marching over. And we should say it was, you know, not just her. It was, you know, Katie Hill and Lauren Underwood and Angie Craig and others, I think, who went over there to look for Mitch McConnell, to bring the fight literally to Mitch McConnell, which is something that I've been begging Democrats to see more from Democrats to do for 2 years, you know, because somehow Mitch McConnell stays out of the news. But the other day, they walked over there and they made the story about Mitch McConnell. And this has nothing to do with ideology, right? This has to do with just like, you're in a political fight. This is how you get media attention to where the points of pressure should be put. And for some reason, the Democrats, prior to, you know, those freshman Democrats going and doing this, could not figure that out or would not put themselves out there. I mean, it's a mystery to me, and I think it's a fascinating sort of like paradox. She's there, her acclaim is ideological, but what she's doing right now, you don't have to believe in Medicare for all, single payer health insurance to go and say Mitch McConnell is responsible for the shutdown, right? You don't have to be for free college. You don't have to be for debt forgiveness or for the government being involved in manufacturing generic drugs or anything to go and say Mitch McConnell is the person that we should be directing our media attention to. That's just like tactical politics.
Of course. And, you know, and I'm impressed because I think that, you know, that they understand something, which is they understand the moment that they're in,
right,
which is a real problem for some of these people who've been around a while, right? They just, you see so much, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, the fear of impeachment, of going down that road. They're living in 1998. They think, and, you know, they're thinking Donald Trump is Bill Clinton. I mean, it couldn't be a more different situation, number one, or a more different world that we're living in. And, you know, you see a lot of this fighting the last war thing among the veterans. And these younger, you know, or I shouldn't just say younger, there are some who are older who come in, the newer you know, members of the Congress are much more living in the moment. They're looking at the situation much more clearly as being, you know, what it is. That partisan battle is where the battlefield is.
Yep.
There's not, you know, I think there'll be plenty of fights down the road about single payer, you know. About
we're going to see that. Yeah, it's coming very shortly.
All that
right.
stuff. There's time for that, and it will happen, and, you know, that's fine. You know, that's what, that's the way it should work. But in this moment, these are people who are willing to sort of live in the time that they're in and fight the battle that is before them. And I am really impressed by that. And it's so necessary because the Republican Party has gone batshit crazy. And,
yep.
you know, there's got to be some pushback here.
Digby, Heather Parton, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
I sort of feel like Nancy Pelosi's not necessarily, well, I don't know if Nancy Pelosi should have been doing a pretty decent job, you know, at least tactically. But some of these Democrats, it's not even fighting the last war as much as it's fighting like the first war that they were in. I think that's what happens.
Fighting.
Well, they're still, you know, I think a lot of this generation still sort of like it. The lesson that they're operating under was George McGovern. And I don't think they necessarily took the right lesson from that. I don't know. But regardless, they're, you know, they don't seem to have picked up any cues from any of the other fights since then. But all right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, David Feldman will be joining us. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program. I'm pretty sure this is like his third visit. I feel like he was on maybe years ago, and then he was on like a month or two ago with Michael. He is the host of the David Feldman Show, which I believe is on some terrestrial radio, obviously available as a podcast. David, are you there?
Yes, yes, it's great to be back, Sam. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for joining us. I should also say that I remember seeing you. I still remember jokes of yours from stand-up I saw at Catch a Rising.
Are you like my? Am I getting Cernovich now? Because I thought I've scrubbed. most of them off my Twitter feed.
They're off your Twitter feed, but this was almost 20 years before Twitter. I remember seeing you at the Catch a Rising Star in the early 90s in Cambridge.
Yeah. I remember that was one of my favorite rooms.
Yeah. I remember the jokes you see. I mean, I guess that's not terribly impressive for you.
What are the jokes? I guess
I remember the joke that you had where you would say, you know, we need more women leaders. We need more women leaders because they're the best, and they will never start a war, except for you know, Margaret Thatcher and Indira Gandhi. And you listed every single female leader of a country who had all started wars.
Did you include Golda Meir?
Golda Meir, yes. Okay, I think it was probably Golda Meir.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that he wasn't caping for Israel.
Well, yeah. Were you?
And George Herbert Walker Bush started a war too, and he was kind of a.
But this was
This
was. You're saying that George Herbert Walker Bush was.
A cuck.
Was a cuck. Is that what you're saying?
I don't, it's not for me to speak ill of people who deserve to be dead.
Oh, there you go. That's very nice of you.
That's how I was raised.
Do you remember that joke?
I kind of remember. I had some bits that today would, I don't know if they would be particularly.
Oh, no, none of them would be funny. Not at all. But you were doing like political sarcastic sort of type of humor at that time. But, you know, I've just told you, I mean, that's a bit of a compliment, right? I mean, I remember jokes of yours from 30 years ago, and you just sort of.
I think, to me, to be honest, and I'm glad you invited me on the show, and I love your show, but I don't think it's a compliment to somebody my age. I think you're just showing off your memory in front of me. You're just saying, look how young I am. Look what I can. Well, look at the synapses in my brain, old man.
Well, it wasn't an under 15 club at that time that you were performing in. I mean, I was obviously old enough to attend a comedy club and be doing comedy.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a passive-aggressive compliment. What you're saying to me is, you know, you were one of the great. Well, you didn't even bother to say you're one of the greats. You just said to me, when I was a kid,
I don't want to get carried away. I mean, I didn't.
What?
I didn't say that. I mean, you know, I mean, I wasn't. I'm pretty accurate with my assessments. I said I saw you.
Kind of like ageism.
Sam told me before you came on the air that he used his ID, proving he was 21 for the first time to go see you.
That's right.
And that's when he remembers it.
No, I was taken there by my parents as a pre-bought bar mitzvah gift. Right.
Will you take me to see David Feldman, please? I'd like the Indira Gandhi humor.
Yeah, and this is not a compliment.
Oh, well.
This is insulting. You're saying, like, I'm Jewish. Let's go see an old Jewish comic like Sam Levinson or Jackie May. You know, and it was 30 years ago. You're just putting me off the pasture here. This is not the proper way to treat a guest. No, I feel really insulted now.
I apologize. I meant no offense whatsoever. I know this has been a trying process for you.
Hang on. The nurse is removing the catheter. Okay. Yeah. You know what? It's still clean. Don't read the manual. They want you to buy a new cat. This is just... It's fine. It's clean. Okay, go ahead.
That's gross.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, super gross. Now, David, I know this has been a little bit trying for you. My understanding, you had a little bit of a complaint about your pre-interview?
Your producers, there's a phalanx of like three producers that I have to go through before we go live. And the pre-interview, you know, I've done talk shows before. And this is like the first time where they don't ask me what I'm going to talk about. They tell me what not to talk about on the show.
Right.
They didn't screen any of my bits. They just said, these are the things. Your producer, Bemelman.
Bemelman, you know, right.
Bemelman.
Okay.
the kid with the Bemelman, the kid with the baseball cap turned sideways.
Right. There's a couple of those, but yes.
Yeah.
I like how Feldman Jewizes everybody.
The right, two Bemelman.
Most, like the most Gentile things happening in this studio, he's turned into Bemelman.
Right. Well, he's not. He's not working at, what do you call it, Brighton Beach until the summer. So he's here for the winter. But yes, Bemelman.
Is that Michael Brooks talking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know, should we tell what Mandelbrot? Michael Mandelbrot? Is that Michael Mandelbrot?
Is that your real name?
Michael
Brooks? No, the real name was Berkovich.
Was that right?
Actually, yes, it really was.
Brockovich?
He couldn't get it. That was, yeah, and then it was Berkowitz.
You mean Brockovich?
No.
Who says Brockovich?
People from that part of the world, like the old country.
Which old country are we from?
I don't fucking
Italy?
It. Yeah, sure. No, like Romania or something like
Brockovich.
That. Brockovich.
Okay.
Speaking of which, that's a good transition.
What's that?
Nothing.
Oh.
I don't want it to be a surprise.
Well,
I want
all right. We'll get there.
I'm hungry to get to that.
Right. Yeah. We'll get there. But David, no, I'm sorry, we interrupted. Are you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Right. Anyway, I went through Mandelbrot and Bemelman and Potemkin.
Potemkin,
who I don't even think was really there. Your producer Potemkin.
Uh-huh.
I never actually saw Potemkin.
Very good. Very good.
That is.
Like I said, oh, you got to wait for Potemkin. He's coming in.
It's the most, cerebral borscht.
Anyway.
Right.
I had no intention, and I said this during the pre-interview, and they gave me the list. I'm not going to bring up your facelift. This is a political show.
Right. No, I appreciate
Why
that.
Would I bring up your facelift?
There's no reason for you to do that. I mean, it's probably best that you hadn't.
Not bringing that up. Not bringing Michael Brooks.
Right.
Going to work for Dave Rubin's new network. Why would I?
I'm interested in ideas. I'm interested in ideas.
Fracking money. Little fracking money.
Yeah. Do you take fracking money?
I'm working towards it.
Yeah. That's where all the big money is. What else did you?
I have taken fracking money at one point in my career, actually, but that's a story for only members only.
Oh, there you go. Of course.
Patreon.com/TMBS.
Yes, for the fracking story.
The fracking story.
Was there anything else that you were told not to bring up? Or
it's okay. I won't bring this. I won't bring this stuff up.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. That's helpful.
And the fact that the show is not done in Brooklyn. The fact that it's being done in the Cayman Islands.
Right. Well, it's warmer.
Nobody's business.
Nobody's business. We could.
How great
we could
that be?
Move it to the Cayman Islands.
Dude, I am so voting in favor of that.
Where do you do your show, David? I've never been able to figure it out.
The Milt Cayman Islands. It's some islands named after an old Jewish comedian named Milt Cayman. Very
Milt Cayman.
Big in the Borscht Belt. Milt Cayman. You remember Milt Cayman?
I don't remember Milt Cayman. No, I mean I'm much younger than that. Far too young to know Milt Cayman. Is he a real guy?
There we go again.
Okay.
Huh?
So no, I'm sorry. I didn't. I didn't mean in any way. Right. Now, David, we've prepared something for you because we know, Michael was in between the time he was running around doing errands for Dave Rubin.
Has been downgraded to Aaron status.
Well, I mean,
come on,
you got to do it from a distance.
No, I have
setting
to
up his new Patreon system that Dave Rubin's
Notreon,
right?
Notreon,
yeah,
Notreon.
Whatever it is. And
is there a cased system? Your show.
Whoa, well, dude, that is so harsh.
I mean, a little
Leave
bit.
Leave the wife out of it, bro. Damn.
What?
You didn't get that one.
I'm so glad you didn't.
That went over his head.
Don't bring it up.
I won't. But I caught you. I caught you loud and clear, Feldo.
You let it go on the live show. I watched it.
I did. I was trying to be classy. And I thought Sam was being classy, but now I realize he just didn't get it.
I didn't hear. What are you talking about?
No, it's my little
talk. Well, don't mention. I like her. Don't.
Of course.
Don't mention. Just say somebody you were going after.
No wives.
Okay.
Okay, this is a good transition. Leave the woman and children out of it.
Right. Let's leave the women and children out. We have something to play for you to celebrate the 20-year anniversary of something that my understanding is that you are a big fan of. Here, it is.
This is Brendan and I.
The O.J.
favorite.
Murder? The O.J. murder was a couple of years. But O.J. murder was like 94. It's not true.
This is Brendan and I's favorite scene.
Here it is.
Jews, that's right. I knew it was something. Tony, you know that guy Titleman? Owns all that property. That motel down the street from the club. The Jew with the black clothes and the curls and everything.
They're called Hasidim.
Hasidim, but I don't believe them.
It is the 20-year anniversary of The Sopranos.
Yeah, I see them, but I don't believe them. Polly Walnuts, right?
That's right. That's right. You're a big Sopranos fan, and little Steven was on the picket lines, the L.A. School strike picket lines.
Yeah. So how do you want me to respond to this?
I don't know. Jesus
Christ!
Did we offend you in some way?
Was that another thing?
Do you mind if I unveil I'm doing like a beta version of myself. So I'd like to respond, but I want to cut through the left-wing progressive clutter.
Okay.
And stand out.
Right.
Because, you know, there are a lot of really great people doing what you do.
Right.
And what
you do.
And so, yeah. But, you know, I want to stand out. You know,
right. You want to brand yourself?
It's hard for someone like... I'm sorry?
You want to brand yourself.
I want to brand myself, and it's hard for someone like me. I read one book, and I smoke a lot of dope.
Right.
What was the book?
So,
What was the book?
It was a Christopher Hedges... I don't remember. It was a Christopher Hedges book, and I learned what the word oligarch meant, so I can explain away... a lot of the Democratic Party as tools of the oligarchs.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's working for me. I can dismiss practically everything in the Democratic Party, still be a progressive, and bring up, you know, Hillary and the Clinton Foundation, Haiti.
Right, of course.
Hey, that's a real story, sir.
That's a what?
That's a real one, sir.
That's a real story.
Yes, indeed.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I read Christopher Hedges. And, there, you know, the Democratic Party, you know, we need a purity test. So I'm going to be, I want to be the big nothing burger guy. That's my thing.
The big nothing burger. So, give us an example of what would be a big nothing burger.
AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's a big nothing burger. She's part of the same swamp they all come from.
And
she's an oligarch. And you're just not seeing it. That's my so this way I don't have to read, because I don't like, I read, to be honest with you, I read like the first sample of the Christopher Hedges book.
Wait, you didn't read the book, you just read the sample.
And I learned oligarch, and I think I know what plutocrat means. So, just bring up whatever you want, and I'll be the guy who says it's a big nothing burger.
Okay.
And we need a purity test, and then I'll scream and rant and rave, and smoke some more dope. And so you brought up The Sopranos. That was a big nothing burger.
Right. Well,
with a side of pasta.
No, of course. But let me ask you about this then. All right. Then this is appropriate. There was a BuzzFeed article that came out today. I mean, it is, you know, it hasn't been confirmed outside of this buzz. But apparently the president told his personal lawyer to go to Congress and lie Do you think that's relevant?
Big Nothing Burger. Big Nothing Burger. Michael Cohen? Big Nothing Burger. The Russia investigation? I mean, come on. You know, what, you know, hey, what about the McKinley assassination? Huh? What about the Garfield assassination? I mean, Booth got away with it for, like, who was hiding Booth? If they're all part of the same system.
Oligarchy.
Right. Big Nothing.
The deep dark state. Suddenly, the are plutocrats, like, part of spy agencies? Because I'm not sure I'm using the word plutocrat, but, you know, Clapper.
Right.
And, you know, he's part of the same deep, dark plutocracy that was, you know, behind the Clinton Foundation. So there's nothing there with Russia. And it's just a distraction to keep our eyes off something that you don't know about, that I can lord over you because I read Chris Hedges.
I see.
And I'm smart.
Okay.
Yeah. Michael Cohen. They all lie before Congress. That's what they do. That's what they do. They lie before Congress. What about Congress lying before us? Huh? You don't talk about that. What about the plutocrats? I mean, you know, it's just so, I don't know, you're not saying the forest through the trees. By the way, it's a nothing burger, and I'm kind of like driving into the skid of getting older.
Right.
And I've come up with a new term, and it's this isn't my first rodeo, Sam.
Is that the new term?
Are you there?
Yeah.
The new term that I came up with. It's not my first rodeo.
But that's not.
I've seen things.
But what is the new term that you brought up? This isn't my first rodeo?
This isn't my first rodeo because it gives me, you know, Gianforte, that congressman who body slams people.
Right.
It makes me feel like him. Like, he's the kind of guy who's gone to rodeos.
I see. So you saying it's not your first rodeo, it's obviously a metaphor, but it also implies that maybe you've actually, you're a cowboy.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. That comes off. Now, all right, so you think...
The man of the people.
Can I ask you a question on the opposite end? Okay, so...
Sure.
Obviously, perjuring yourself before Congress, lying to Congress, no big deal, because that Congress lies to us, as you said. What about, though, some things in a positive direction? What about Bernie Sanders getting even really conservative and sort of more corporate members, nothing burger members of the Democratic Party, to sign on to Medicare for All? What about that? That must be a positive symbol.
Medicare for All is a big nothing burger.
Now, why do you say that?
And because I don't know the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. I'm testing this out here. So
No, it's going well. I actually think that you're probably pulling members off of our show right now. They're all just like signing up for the new David Feldman show or the... Is that what you're going to call it? With this new persona, are you going to call it like something like not your dad's rodeo or something like that?
Yeah, well, I'm not doing this to make money. I've gotten rid of all my memberships. To be honest with you, I'm getting money from one person. I can't mention his name.
You
can't?
Can you give us a sense of who it is? I mean, people are going to probably want to know.
He's one of the lesser-known Koch brothers.
The one who was excommunicated for... wasn't one of the Koch
brothers... No, there's another Koch brother that nobody knows about.
Wow.
So he's been giving me money, yeah.
Oh, well, that makes it
easier. How did Jane Mayer miss him?
Yeah. You want to know his name?
Sure.
Because his last name is Koch.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He'd be one of the lesser known
Koch brothers.
He'd be one of the lesser known Koch, huh?
What was his name? The first name.
Well, you know, it really changed him growing up because people made fun of him for having the first name that didn't really match Coke. And so...
What would that be?
Yeah.
Do you want to...
Yeah, I go pee-pee in York.
I go pee-pee.
In York. His name was I go pee-pee in York.
Yes.
And it really affected him.
That's so fucking stupid.
Can you imagine growing up? You have David Coke, Charles Coke. Oh, and that's our older brother. I go pee pee in York.
So he was an older brother. He was an older brother. Huh?
He was the older brother.
So Mr. and Mrs. Coke started with this, and then they realized probably not a good idea. Like, that was funny for a while, but then it turns out to be not good. Mm-hmm. So let's just go with David Coke. And is that a family name? Or what was that? They were just like, this could be funny. Let's try it out.
They just, I don't know why they would name a child. I don't know. I don't know why somebody would name their child I go pee pee in your. No idea.
No idea. It's a strange thing. All right. Well, I mean, let's get back to just one more issue. What about this teacher strike? Is that hopeful? Are you hopeful in any way when you see tens of thousands of teachers going out on strike and labor actions?
Listen, you know, it's a nothing burger. It's the plutocrats within the unions using the teachers to further their oligarchical needs. Because, and now, I don't know if you can see the crazy in my eyes, okay? But trust me, there's crazy in my eyes.
No, I believe it.
What you've got to understand about the teacher strike, and this is why it's a big nothing burger, is Crimea, Khrushchev had given Crimea to the Ukraine. Back then it was the Ukraine, as a peace overture. So Crimea was always a part of Russia. So, and we knew that when Obama was president, but suddenly Putin is an oligarchical plutocrat for taking Crimea. It was always a part of Russia. That's why the teacher's strike is the big nothing burger. And if you don't see that, you need to read Andrew Bacevich. You need to study military history. That's why the teacher's strike is not going to make it. That just doesn't do it for me. It's one big nothing burger. But you don't know history. You don't know anything about Crimea and Khrushchev.
I knew some of what you were talking about, but you're right. I guess I don't...
It's not going to change anything, the teacher strike. Because they all lie before Congress.
Wait a second. So is there, do you think there's anything that would constitute a full-on burger?
No. There's a big, everything's a nothing burger. I'll tell you why. I smoke a lot of dope. And, you know, I read the New York Times, my mind wanders. That can't be my fault, right? So I need to explain away things. Let me just clear my throat.
I was going to say, you've aged quite a bit.
I smoke so much dope.
Right.
I don't like to read, but I like to talk about things. And when I pick up, because I have passion, you know, I have a lot of anger.
Right.
I just don't know things to be angry about. But I've got rage that has to be channeled somewhere. And I try to read the New York Times, but it's, you know, you get past the first letter and your mind wanders in each article. Like, I keep seeing the, like, I'll see an article. Oh, I'll read this. This looks interesting. And I see the letter B, like buy. I think it's like buys. And I've lost interest. I smoke a lot of dope.
Yeah,
but I do. I think I know what plutocrat means.
Right. Well, I got to say, this new David Feldman, I think there's a market. There's definitely a market. Now, it's not it's not one that isn't being fulfilled a little bit right now. I got to be honest with you. But
really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you look out there? I mean, have you done any like sort of market testing? Is there anybody out there that you think that you might be bumping up against?
You know, I'm so threatened by anybody that I can't watch other people's shows or listen to other comedians or read other writers because, you know, it just reminds me of my own inadequacy. So no.
Well,
that's very, the only part I'm not seeing though is the rage.
Yeah,
the rage.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's a different Patreon level. That's what the people pay for. That you got to pay for it.
Right. Oh, that sounds like a good business model to me, actually, David. Well, listen, I'm glad. I mean, is this the debut? Are we seeing this now for the first time? Because
yes.
I got to say, the beta test has gone well.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm hoping it's going to work. I think I'm going to cut through the clutter of the internet.
Are you intentionally using the word dope to talk about weed? Is that an age joke as well?
Dope. What are the kids calling marijuana these days?
What is it? What are they calling it, Brendan?
What a Jewish one. I don't
know. Yeah, Brendan doesn't know. What Matt? What are the kids calling dope these days?
Weed.
Yeah, weed.
Weed.
Mary
pot.
Jane.
Weed.
Yeah, sweet Mary Jane, man.
Smoke that lounge.
Marijuana. Okay.
Grass.
Ganja.
People aren't calling it grass anymore.
No,
because
they're definitely not calling it grass anymore.
How do you call it weed when it's not even like a, most people are vaping it?
Herbal medication.
I mean, I'm not vaping it.
All right. Well, David, this has been great. I'm glad we got the first taste on this. Do you have a website that people can go and check out your new beta version of David Feldman?
See, that's the other thing. The internet, I can't type.
Right.
I can't use a computer. I should mention that. So the internet's a big nothing burger as well.
You're done with it. That's going to cut.
I don't use the internet.
That's going to cut into your Patreon subscriptions slightly. David,
all right.
I thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad we got the first taste of the beta version of David Feldman.
Thank you, and this has been one giant, delicious nothing burger. I cannot, you know, I've done a lot of these. This isn't my first rodeo.
No, we can tell. You seemed well versed.
Can I say something? Sure. David, I think this is so funny and so exciting. I'm going to remember this riff 30 years from now.
For 30 years.
Oh, well, leave a stone at my grave when you remember it.
David Feldman, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
David, everybody, go subscribe to David Feldman's podcast for real. He's great.
So funny.
He's a gem.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half, and we're going to do it with a...
I don't know if this is long enough.
Oh, this may not be long. We'll switch to something else if we have to, but... this is a we got a ton. We should say in the fun half, we're going to go over a ton of like fan trolling of Dave Rubin.
And like fans on every, like fans who are like our friends with their own like bigger show than us, to people
right.
who are creative, awesome people on YouTube that we're meeting for the first time. It's basically everybody.
There has
in
been
like the Marvel book universe of this show.
There's, you know, it's interesting. I think it's because of the just like the of the nature of the news right now or whatever it is. But Dave Rubin went on a, and we'll talk about this in the fun half. But he did an Ask Me Anything live video stream to announce his shutting down his Patreon, and he started getting trolled about his ducking me and us here, and then there was a video, and then there was like 14 videos that were mashups of them, all of them fantastic. We will play them in the fun half. But here is a new song. Who did this?
John Vegan or Vegan?
John Vegan. Oh,
goes by Riptide on YouTube.
Oh, do we also have? We also have that. Do we have we don't have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song this week. But
we've got an Adam Rainstopper song.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
All right, let's play a little bit of it. How long is it? Let's play just a minute of it, and then we'll go into the Very Majority Report. Now, what is the name of this?
I think we should play this, a Very Majority Report thing, and then come back and then go to Rainstopper. And then.
Okay, that's what we'll do.
Yeah. This is called a very, what is it? I can't read it.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar remix. And this is by, who's it?
John Vegan.
John Vegan.
Vegan. Vegan. Vegan. Riptide on YouTube.
Calling from a 919 area code. Who's this? Where you calling from?
Wow.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Well, let's just do this exercise.
Whoa, whoa.
Super sick.
It's all good.
Super sick.
Hell yeah.
Right. You don't need the means test Social Security. You don't need the means test
Medicare.
Nobody cares.
The way that you
means test that.
You tax wealthy people more.
What's the point? And that's just simply not enough.
And as you always say, as soon as you stick in that access, that's that we already do have universal health.
I have access to BMW.
Right.
It's a weird, weird, weird time for politics right now.
That's legit.
Galaxy brain. This is a freak shit.
He finally gets to fulfill his destiny. Burgers, the mall, yeah, just a little baby.
Very legal, very good.
I thought this was a joke.
Hamburg alert.
Well, I mean, but things are really bad.
Very sweet. I like that.
That was good.
I want to make that the harmonizing my ringtone. All right, and so here is an Adam Rainstopper. This is an open letter to Jimmy Reefercake. All the hypocrisy. An open letter to Jimmy Reefercake. Have they had a falling out?
I believe so.
Apparently.
Yeah, I believe Adam Rainstopper is a bit upset with maybe Jimmy's lack of. You know, taking on certain criticisms of, like, Tulsi Gabbard, for instance, and Rainstopper doesn't want to be associated with that. And I personally, you know, I think some of us can understand why.
All right. Well, let's. This is.
Is there a lyric sheet for this? Because I cannot understand.
All right. Well, let's see if we can hear some of it.
Running for president. No, to sell Jimmy's part of the meal. Apologize for my part in the sale. Maybe one day he'll let this shit fail like a dream. I remind you we're both expendable. Am I wasting my time at this delicate stage? I've been places you can't imagine. Will not see
Wow. That is like early, early replacements. I mean, that obviously a lot of punk back like the feels like early 80s. Yeah. But there seems to be, some issues there. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes the show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off all of your coffees. We will be here on Monday with our MLK compilation. Back live on Tuesday. Today is Friday.
Free speech. That's what we need. Why would Dave Rubin debate Sam Cedar? All he wants to do is argue, not engage in ideas.
Patreon has changed the terms of service.
I no longer feel comfortable being on a platform where people can be canceled merely for having a certain viewpoint that may or may not be my own.
Meanwhile, this week on TMBS.
More of that sort of thing. David Adler, he is on the governing body of DM25 and an advisor and co-writer with Yanis Varoufakis. We talked about some of the left nationalist projects arising in Europe and what the sort of broader strategic answer for the left is. It's a great conversation. And on Tuesday, we had on Ada Kasparian, and go to check out our YouTube links and get the whole thing at patreon.com/TMBS and come see us at the live show.
Jamie?
So on episode 35 of The Antifada, we talk about this insane Netflix series about Leon Trotsky, or Leon Thotsky, as the case may be. And we have our friend Alex Gendler, who grew up in the waning years of the USSR, to sort of situate this brilliant cultural product in the context of Putin's neoliberal and authoritarian Russia, while the rest of us ponder how one man could lay so much pipe and still have time to plot an entire revolution all by himself.
There you go.
We also have a bonus for our patrons, where we read some Trotsky. He's talking about his Knight Rider-esque Chad train that won the Russian Civil War. And I also explain a dumb inside joke so that everyone can enjoy the clip that I have of John Benjamin saying it for me.
There you go.
Recorded last night, 2+ hours on Nathaniel Hawthorne's The House of the Seven Gables. It's going to be good, folks. It'll be out this weekend.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
Make fun of me.